وعلى آله وصحبه وبارك وسلم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. So we're going to finish up hadith number 7 today. This is a hadith we've been looking at for a few weeks. Adinu Nasiha. If people want to pull it up, it's hadith number 7 in the 40 hadith of Imam Nawawi. It's on the authority of a companion by the name of Tamim Ad-Dari. And so we're going to look at the last category today and just some general kind of reflections on Nasiha itself before Maghrib time. Does anybody have it in front of them? They can read it for us. English and Arabic, either or. Yeah, go for it.
On the authority of Tamim Ad-Dari, may Allah be pleased with him, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "Religion is nasiha, sincerity." He said to him, he, peace be upon him, said, "To Allah, his book, his messenger, and to the leaders of the Muslim and their common folk."
Great. Does anybody want to read the Arabic? Yeah, go ahead. So you want to try to, as best as you can, build a relationship with also like the Arabic. These are very short, kind of concise hadith that we're looking at. One of them was really long, the hadith Jibrail, the second one. But a lot of them are very short. And it helps to just build a relationship with it pedagogically also, that you'll be able to keep coming back to it in terms of it kind of playing a role in influencing decision-making, choices, etc. So we looked at the first four categories here and also looked at, in detail, the narrator of the hadith, Tamim Ad-Dari. And so we want to look at the last category that's here today where it says, wa'amatihim, meaning the common people, right? So this hadith is said to be one of the most comprehensive hadith. It sets a basis of real understanding of just how we conduct ourselves with all of creation, pretty much, as well as our Creator, right? That you have this thing of nasiha, which is just goodwill, sincere conduct, but a relationship foundationally with Allah, His Book, His Messenger, the leaders of the, you know, societies that we're in, as well as the common people. And there's elements there that are rooted in positivity. So we look at this last category now. Wa'amatihim is not necessarily juxtaposed only to the category that precedes of leadership, but just talking about people more broadly, people in their generality. The companions of the Prophet are asking this question with a sense of who are they supposed to have this to from the standpoint of the Meccan society in which they live, being an ever-increasing diverse society, also the Medinese society, like how do we just engage with the people around us? And when you look at the prophets, when they would speak to their people, they would say that they have this thing of goodwill towards the ones that they're in service of, right? And that same derivation that comes from nasiha then broadens it from not being something that's just limited to advice in a vacuum. But the idea is that you don't want to engage somebody for your own self-betterment. You want to engage somebody for their betterment. Where you have a genuine care, a genuine affection, a genuine compassion, a genuine sense of goodwill for the other, simply because you share humanity with them, you share this salient characteristic, and it isn't divided in any capacity. So when we're talking about now these two groupings of individuals, you're either going to be from the a'imma, like people who are in a place of leadership, or you're from the am, like the people who are being led. These are just like a broader way of defining society on a whole. So we can understand from the language and what's present, what's also purposely absent. So it's not saying that you have this love for somebody just because they come from a certain race, or you love somebody just because they come from a certain culture. You have affinity towards someone because they share a certain level of affluence or influence with you, right? But this is a very revolutionary idea and thought within the Meccan society, but also just broader society on a whole, right? It's not any different from the world we live in right now, that race and class determine who has and who has not. The Prophet ﷺ is telling his companions, you have to have this kind of goodwill towards just everybody. There's no conditions or qualifications around it. You have this sense of sincere conduct towards just people on a whole. And that category is really important to understand, because this is what we're going to come into interactions with on a regular basis. The way you treat the security guard, the way you treat your Uber driver, the way you treat the professors in your class, the way you treat people who love you, the way you treat people who dislike you, the way you treat and think about the people who vacuum the carpet that you were sitting on, the way you think about people who serve you food, as much as you think about the people who are blessed enough to be able to share the meal with you and they're eating what was served, right? Across the board, every single individual that you come into interaction with has some capacity of right over you within this tradition. So you have hadith that say things like, "Inna Allah katab al-ihsan ala kulli shay," that Allah has written ihsan on everything, like beauty. Ihsan becomes the category of one of the dimensions of our tradition of spirituality, right? In the second hadith we looked at, the angel Jibrail comes and teaches us about our religion through this hadith. When he defines ihsan, antabudu Allah ka'annaka tarah, that you worship Allah as if you see him. So you understand, although you cannot see him, he sees you. So that's the word in this other hadith, inna Allah katab al ihsan ala kulli shay, that Allah has written ihsan on everything, meaning that if ihsan is written on everything, that you have capacity to interject ihsan in everything that you do. Like, there can be beauty in every single thing that you do. There can be excellence in every single thing that you do. The way that you work, the way that you, like, rest, the way that you engage in discussions, the way that you cook, the way that you eat, the way that you dress, the way that you sleep. In Allah katab al-ihsan ala kulli shay, that if there's an element of ihsan that's written on everything, it means that every single thing has the capacity to have ihsan in it, meaning you can bring beauty to everything. Does that make sense? So then by extension, you can bring beauty to your interactions with every person that you interact with. Wa'amatihim. You have nasiha to everybody. Goodwill, sincere conduct, compassion, a sense of just wholeness that you're bringing, not just your physical body, but you're bringing your heart to every interaction. You're bringing love to every interaction. Does that make sense? It's important to understand, because we live in a society where segmentation takes place both overtly and very subtly, right? There's people who we're fortunate enough that tell us to our face that they want nothing to do with us. And then there's people who pretend like they do, but they also don't really want anything to do. And quite often we get to a place where our recognition of how we treat others is not necessarily on the terms of our tradition, but on the terms of traditions that have nothing to do with what our tradition calls us to. We fall into a place where who we chase after are the ones that our religion tells us it's probably better that you don't really spend time with people like that. The validation that we seek makes no sense. And the people who we probably benefit a lot from spending time with, we don't necessarily engage so much, right? So you have hadith, for example, that say the worst wedding feasts, the worst walimas, are the ones that those that should have been invited were not invited to, and those that shouldn't have been invited, those are the ones that are there. Do you get what I mean? And so figuring it all out in the context of this fifth category in this hadith, right? The first, lillahi, to Allah, likitabihi, to his book, lirasulihi, to his messenger, to the a'imma of the Muslims, wa'amatihim, and to their common people. You can't have that if you're not engaging people from backgrounds that are different from your own in meaningful ways. When you're Muslim, you're just supposed to be different from everybody else. You have to be comfortable with that. And different isn't just, I grow a beard, I wear a scarf on my head, I go to a prayer on Friday afternoon, or I pray five times a day, or I wash up for prayer and stick my foot in the sink. That's one aspect of difference that you just gotta be comfortable with. But difference also in the sense that you're meant to be a person of mercy and compassion and love. You're meant to be in a place where you take care of your heart. You're supposed to be patient and kind and generous. If it's not a Muslim who's a person of integrity and honesty, who else would be a person of integrity and honesty? And that mode is not rooted in self-deprecation, but in these five categories, you have now the manifestation of perspective, self-wise, of, well, what's really the basis of how I relate to these five things categorically? And then this fifth one in particular, just the people. How do I engage with the people? How do I treat people? How do I understand the way I relate to people, especially people that come from backgrounds that are not the same as mine? It doesn't say that your nasiha is only to the people who you share race with, or culture with, or class with. It doesn't say your inclination and affinity should be with people who are born into Islam like you, or only converts like you. It's just saying that you gotta have this thing wholly, fully, just to everybody. Why would that not be a part of our religion? Do you get what I mean? Like, it's not meant to be a hardship, but it claims to be a final testament in a series of testaments sent. There's not supposed to be anything that comes to humanity afterwards. So would it make sense that there was foundational principle that created categorically conditions on who you treat well to be limited in some capacity to just people of a certain kind of locale or community? Do you get what I mean? The whole idea is that you want to embody goodness, right? And there's certain things that are categorically just always good. The Prophet is good. Quran is good. Allah is good. That's why we have hadith, takhalluqu bi akhlaqillah, that embody the characteristics of the divine. So God is good and God is Rahman. So have rahmah in your life because you know God is good. And if God has rahmah, then be like God as best as you can and be a person of rahmah. God is Hakim, so be a person of wisdom, have hikmah, because God is good and God is wise, so you want to try to have wisdom, meaning don't be foolish or ignorant or jahil. And so here too, Allah is Wadud, He's the source of love. God does not love His creation because they come from a particular background or class or creed. Allah's love for us is not because of who we are, but because of who He is, Azza wa Jal. And the whole idea in this hadith is that you treat someone not based off of who they are, but you treat them based off of who you are and who you want to be. And you can fundamentally assess who you are based off of how do you treat people. Does this make sense? So when you get into the Uber, and there's been people who've been driving, like likely your Uber driver and your cab driver is Muslim. Do you know? It's not a stereotype. That's just fact. That's what it's going to be. That's why when these cab drivers went on a strike a while ago, like, and it turned things upside down, their union is very powerful because they are people who are also people of consciousness. right? That's what Muslims are supposed to be, people of consciousness, do you know? So they were willing to give up their livelihood multiple times over in ways that others might not be, right? But when was the last time you got into a taxi cab and said thank you to the cab driver? When was the last time you asked them how their day was going, right? It's not meant to be self-deprecating, but understanding it in the context of the hadith, Adinu Nasiha, that you have also this thing of whole goodwill towards just this last category of people, which is like everybody. How do you start to build that sense of connectivity? Because it's hard, right? The Prophet alayhi salam, if you come to our Wednesday Sirah class, we're at a point now where there's public calling to Islam. Literally, there's hadith that we've been looking at where the Prophet is in a marketplace at the outskirts of Mecca, because if he starts to preach in the vicinity of the Kaaba, his people are getting beaten and abused, like physically, right? Abdullah ibn Mas'ud gets beaten when he reads the Quran out loud for the first time. Abu Bakr radiallahu anh, he gets beaten so hard, he gets rendered unconscious, they think he dies. And his tribesmen tell the tribes people of the ones who attacked him that if he doesn't get up, we're going to come after the guy who did this to him and take his life. That's what was happening at the vicinity of the Kaaba. So he goes to the outer markets so that there's not that much potential for abuse. And there's people who are asking people, who is this man walking from person to person? And they'll say, that's Muhammad, the son of Abdullah. He's teaching us about this new religion. And they say, who's the person that's following him? They say, that's his uncle. He's telling everybody his nephew's insane. Abu Lahab, there's narrations where he and his wife, Jamil, they would throw garbage at the Prophet. Abu Lahab had a bag of rocks. He would throw stones at the back of the Prophet's head, like as he is speaking, right? He's hurting him. But in the hadith, you don't see the Prophet pick up some stones and throw it back at Abu Lahab. You don't see him throwing dirt back at Abu Lahab. It's not just because of the understanding of the right that Abu Lahab has over him, but also how the Prophet relates to all of the people around him. In this first phase of propagation of public dawah, if the Prophet picked up dirt and threw it back at somebody who's considered one of the leaders of the tribes, do you think those people would say, well, he must be telling us like a good religion? Look at how calm and composed and patient he is. Do you get what I mean? He has to know in the broader sense of how things are going to be received from people. It's not easy. It's tough. So in this sense of now how we relate to this fifth category, the idea isn't just how do you and I speak to each other and I give you nasiha at that simplistic understanding of nasiha that's just advice that points out what you do that's wrong. That's not what this hadith is saying. But how do I bring the fullest sense of me to you so that I can go through all the heaviness and difficulty? Nobody's saying you turn into somebody's doormat. But still, on your own terms, you are engaging people with a sense of what is the best mode of conduct in the moment. Because there are hadith where the Prophet hears companions being racist to each other and he gets angry with them. There are hadith where the Prophet sees people abusing people and he gets angry with them. It's not that those things don't happen. But bringing the fullest version of ourself to an interaction necessitates understanding, well, how do I keep myself full as opposed to running on empty for the most part? And that's what then makes it harder for be the I that I'd like to be in the context of where I interact with people, those who are familiar and those who are unfamiliar. I'm able to make decisions consciously that enable me to then treat people the same. And think, just think about it. Not in a self-deprecating mode, but reflective. Are there some people that you treat better than others? Not like people who annoy you, who are clearly on the wrong side of things. Not people who claim neutrality or that things are complicated when there is no complications, right? Wrong is wrong. I'm just saying day to day. Are there people, you walk into a musalla that you are smiling at a little bit more than others? Are there people that you find more comfort around? These are not good or bad things, but in being able to break down why. What is it that then, by extension, limits me from being something for somebody who I don't share these things with? How can I have this full goodwill towards just people of backgrounds that are different from my own if I'm not thinking about why it is that I connect to people in the ways that I do in the first place? Do you get what I mean? Do you get angry only about certain causes but not others? Like, why? Is it possible to be angered by everything? I mean, yeah, fundamentally you could be, right? Like, do you intellectualize certain? That's not saying, like, who do I get up and do things for? That's a different step, right? In some places, you can't do anything other than hate it with your heart. That's why the hadith says this. But why do I hate certain things and not other things? Why do I love certain things and not other things? Why do I look down or look up at people? Like, why is it not even about condescension, but why is there admiration towards some but not towards others? And then in the midst of it also is what our tradition tells us, that you're going to have to deal with, I'm going to have to deal with, a big part of our inability of loving fully outwardly is that we don't like ourselves so much. Self-care, wellness, self-esteem, self-perception, these things bleed into how we relate to everything. You do something wrong, you think you aren't allowed to make dua anymore. I did this haram thing, I shouldn't be like praying. Like, why would Allah forgive me? How is that showing nasiha to Allah? Like, good conduct. You have no idea who God is then. And you take that same principle and same marker towards like this last category that we're talking about, where fundamentally what gets misconstrued are some of the things that we're wholly bringing. The way you bring that inability to forgive yourself to your prayer, what's the clutter you're bringing to your relationships that are just with people day to day? That person would never want to talk to me. Like, I should never talk to somebody like that. What are you talking about? Like, in both instances, there's some aspect of like flawed perspective that's there, right? Self-esteem, if we define it, is how I see myself and in turn how I treat myself through how I see myself. If you don't know why you treat you a certain way, how are you going to be able to decide why you treat other people a certain way? You need to be able to understand what you bring of yourself into that. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? So what I'd like for us to do, we just take a few minutes as people are trickling in. You can turn to the person next to you, share some names. What do you think so far of what we're talking about? Because we could have this conversation at a very like surface level. You're Muslim, you've got to treat people well and nicely. And there's nothing specific to this that transforms anything. Do you know? Fundamentally, right? There's going to be seas of people that are going to stand on the day of judgment. And they're going to say, Khalid either honored my rights or did not honor my rights. Each one of you is going to be able to make that claim against me. Or for me. Inshallah, you make it for me. But this is what happens as you grow older. It's not about kind of infamy and notoriety and these kinds of things. Those guys on one side of the street are not the ones you necessarily have to think about in that regard, but the people that you stand with every day of your life. As much as I might worry about what you're going to say about me, what's my son going to say about me? What's my daughter going to say about me? What's my wife going to say about me? My parents, what are they going to say about me? Adinu Nasiha interjects now a realm of positivity in the way that we relate to all of this. But not in a place that we become somebody's doormat, but we still control the presence of ourself in that relationship. Do you get what I mean? So you got to know what's going on with you before you can know why it is that you are bringing certain things to other people. You don't like the way your boss treats you during the day? That's not a right for you then to just take it out on your kid when you get home. You had like a tough interaction with somebody someplace? That doesn't mean unhealthy expressions of emotions make sense. And this is why nasiha is such a big part of all of this, because it's also not going to work if you don't take feedback from somebody or advice from someone that says you're not being who you should be. But I can gauge from my interactions with people, like, who is the I that I am right now? And is that really where it is that I want to be? Am I going to be in a place where this category, the am of society, they're going to be in a place. They're not the I'mma, so they're everybody else. What is it that they will say of me in the ways that I interacted with them? The people who matched me in skin color, the people who matched me in gender, the people who matched me in age, who matched me in profession, who matched me in degree acquisition, who matched me in level of religiosity and practice, if that's like a measurable thing, right? Like, what is that part of what I'm bringing to my day? And on whose term am I defining, like, who I'm interacting with and in the ways that I'm interacting with them versus I'm not on my own terms? Like, where do my own terms come in? Or the previous categories, Allah, His book, His messenger, how does that define and dictate the way I relate to the people around me? So we can just turn the people next to us for a few minutes. Like, what are we taking away from this so far? What's it bringing up for us in relation to this last category in the hadith? And then we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead. And if you don't know the names of the people sitting next to you, just share your names first. How's it going? If I move this one, will it bother you?
What?
If I move this, will it bother Okay, so what are some of the things we're talking about? What did we discuss? Yeah. Amazing. Other thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about the difference between responding and reacting. And so often, like, we'll receive reactions from people, which are a reflection of trauma, a reflection of childhood, other, like, relationships with other people. And what is it that we desire? Like, if we desire to, like, be received with grace and compassion, right? Like, even when it can hurt to receive people's reactions, like, if we truly want to receive grace and compassion, we need to show it even when it's painful at times. You and I have kind of talked about this a little bit, but having some kind of fortitude, right? And we had talked a little bit about taking care of ourselves, right? And that fortitude comes from taking care of yourself, that spiritual fitness and wellness, and kindness in relationship with yourself, and knowing yourself. Because the more you know yourself, your reaction can't throw me off as much from me being able to show grace and compassion when maybe you don't have the tools or the facility to show it in that way.
Yeah. And you think about this in the prism of nasiha, right? That we commonly translate as advice. Has anybody given you advice when you just never asked them for advice? You're like, shut up, man. I don't want your advice. Do you know? The advice is not just empty words thrown at random. It's got to be like the right time and the right place for the giving and receiving of it. It's fundamentally like this same idea. You're not just kind of this uniform kind of, you know, static individual. If you were meant to be a robot, you would be a robot, right? If Allah wanted you to be a tree, like he would have made you a tree. He made you a human, and that means that you're going to have varied states of self in relation to everything that's happening outwardly and inwardly. But the same as nasiha being something that's not just like, well, don't do this or do that or don't do that, and you're just a nag to people, or you're elevating yourself by denigrating somebody else because there's no sensibility of the situation and what you're bringing it to, so too the choice that you are actively making in how you respond to something and what you're bringing of yourself has to be aware of, like, the circumstance, the situation, the context, the people involved. But it doesn't have to be overwhelming. It's just you're bringing presence to it. Do you get what I mean? Right? How many times do people get turned away because there's no real sense of how someone will receive the advice? Do you know? And what's the appropriate response in just how we interact with someone more broadly can parallel this same idea. So when the companion learns from the Prophet, alayhi salam, as he becomes Muslim, like he says, teach me something. And the Prophet says, when you hear someone sneeze, say, Yarhamakallah, this is a right they have over you. And then they stand to pray. And in the course of the prayer, somebody sneezes. And this person says, Yarhamakallah, out loud. And the companions look at him. You're not supposed to talk out loud in prayer, right? When you're praying next to somebody, do you have a conversation in the middle of the prayer? No, you're not talking to them. Do you know? And he gets upset. And they're staring at him, and he talks out loud again, why are you staring at me? And the hadith says they start to like hit the inner part of their thighs to get him to understand he shouldn't talk. He gets it, but he doesn't feel so good. At the end of that, the Prophet comes and says to him, what he says, he precedes it by saying, I swear to Allah that Muhammad is the best of teachers. He did not revile me or repudiate me or scold me, but he simply said to me that in the course of this prayer of ours, we're reciting the words of Allah. It's not appropriate to mix them with anything else. Both of them got him to understand that he shouldn't talk when he prays, but one made him feel terrible and the other made him feel that he could still have a relationship with God. But when you look at hadith, you want to not just see what's being said, but also what's not being said. Does the Prophet tell this companion, those guys are idiots, you should only listen to me? No, he doesn't. Does he have to defame them in order for him to have a sense of who he is be brought into the conversation? Do you know? No. Like, the hadith does not say, you know, I can't believe you talked to them, why don't you just come and talk to me? Or like, you shouldn't listen to those guys, you know, religious people, they always like make a mess of things. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't interject itself in that way because he still has a responsibility to everybody involved and is teaching everybody something in that moment. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? What else did we discuss? What else did we talk about? Yeah.
When the last brother was talking, I was thinking in terms of limitations that the more that we know our own limitations, the more we understand Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and then the more we are able to exercise compassion, self-compassion, and compassion toward others. We were talking, and I think generalization is just the way that our brain is wired. Our brain generalizes things to process information easier, but we have to be aware of that limitation and question our biases and our prejudices in order to achieve what Ummah has over us.
Yeah, and limitations also from the standpoint just of overall wellness, right? Like if I am exhausted and I know I have this much energy to put up with somebody's nonsense, do you know what I mean? Then don't go put yourself in a place filled with people who are gonna throw nonsense at you. You need to like take some time to breathe and take some time to breathe. It's okay to rest sometimes and replenish. But if you're running on empty and then you put yourself in a place that you know is going to knock you down, then you're not aware consciously of your own limitations. It's when the Prophet ﷺ tells people who say, I'm just going to fast all the time. I'm just going to stay up at night and pray. And he says, I sleep, I eat, meaning like you're not better at this than I am. And he says, yourselves have a right over you. So you can pay attention to things that give you indication that where your thoughts take you are not necessarily going to always be what is reality, but that then determines how you choose to act and not act with people. And quite often, how you see others and in turn treat others is not a reflection necessarily of who they are, but it's telling you a little bit about yourself. If you don't understand limitations, you're just going to put yourself in places where you feel bad and terrible in a capitalistic society that says, like, you don't take days off. You're supposed to work much more than you signed up for. Money is everything. Affluence is everything. Like, kill yourself in pursuit of something that somebody else is going to enjoy after you die. Or you just sometimes go and sit, right? Some of you came with us to the park on Saturday, right? Wasn't it nice? You just sat outside in the sun. You know what I mean? We talked about stuff, walked around in the grass, and it was nice just to like be outside, you know? And there was people that talked to me afterwards that said, I needed this so badly, right? And I'm happy that they got that, but like, why? Why are you running yourself into the ground that you had to sit in the sun for 20 minutes? Like to you know what I mean? Don't do that to yourself. And embedded in this hadith is the way you relate to these five categories, meaning it's also teaching you how you relate to yourself and what it is that you do for yourself and treat yourself, because you're the common denominator in every single one of the categories. Your relationship to Allah, your relationship to Allah's book, your relationship to Allah's messenger, your relationship to the leaders, your relationship to the common people. You are what is the constant in all of it. If you don't know you, that still doesn't mean that you didn't bring you to everything that you were doing. Do you know? And so I love like people in this community. And when somebody says to me, man, I needed this, I was just like at my wit's end. Why are you letting yourself get to your wit's end? Why do you always have to fall down in order to then realize that you got to do things to keep yourself upright? And then the other part to this that the hadith is telling us is that you got to know then that people are running on empty. So what are you doing to help build for them and take care of them and provide for them and support them? They can start with something as simple that you take ethics from the prophetic tradition, that you greet people that you know and people that you don't know. The best amongst you are the ones who do that. But there's going to be people who come to this gathering right now, where there's like a good number of in this room. Nobody will have said salam to them. How's that possible? Just realistically thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? When you see these videos of people in Mecca and Medina, and they're standing like as the mobs come in and they're passing dates out and they're passing this out and that out. What if everybody did that? It only stands out because somehow being generous is the rarity and not the norm. Why is it not the norm? Because the prophetic example, right? Kana ajwadan nas, the Prophet alayhi salam, he was the most generous of people. So where does that move away? And these are the kind of things you want to think that build up these blocks. The same nonsense that tells you that you can only have someone of your wealth and your race and your culture in your home eating a meal is the same thing that also says somebody else should be the one that's bringing water to somebody. Somebody else should be the one that's eating last. Somebody else should be the one that gives up their seat on the bus. No, man, it should be you. Unless you're tired and exhausted, and then take a seat. Don't hate on yourself. But the norm isn't that we're in that state constantly for beneficial reasons. If you got tired, like great, like we took people on Umrah, they came back from Umrah and they slept for 3 days because they didn't sleep. There's people who took days off after Eid and Ramadan because they tired themselves out. But if you're exhausted because you're chasing after things that give you complacency, then they're going to build up the obstacles inwardly that keep you from seizing openings. I left my office walking out, and the guy who worked in the office said, I bought you these flowers. Why did he buy me flowers? Did he have to do it? Did I ever say to him, you know what, it'd be really nice if you got me some flowers sometime, man? No. But he just went out of his way, and he said, this is for you. That's very nice, right? I didn't get upset with him or agitated. You gave me these gross flowers, or like, you know, like maybe he just doesn't want like to take stuff, and it's like the assumptions don't come in, right? And this is Quran, right? Hal jaza al ihsani ila al ihsan, that is the reward for ihsan, anything other than ihsan. Like beauty just perpetuates beauty. Goodness perpetuates goodness. You don't need somebody's permission to go out there and share your light with people, but you have to have real conversations on what it is that's actually extinguishing or diminishing light. Isn't that you're a bad person, it's just that you don't take care of yourself. You're running on empty constantly. You're numbing and desensitizing as opposed to healing. And then when you're in a place of pain, like the pain is going to be present in the situation that comes up in front of you. And that's where the second part of what I said is important to understand in the context of this part of the hadith. Everybody's got crap going on in their lives. So don't be terrible and push people away. Be kind, be nice, be generous. Make justifications and excuses for people. Not to the point where you tolerate behavior or you expect toleration of behavior that crosses boundaries. But this is also embedded within this hadith. If you do not have self-awareness and self-consciousness, you're going to be in a place where you push away the wrong people and you embrace the right people and you embrace the wrong people. Don't make excuses for people's abuse or mistreatment. That's not something that you should do. And it's not an easy thing. Why there's high rates of recidivism, right? I work with a lot of survivors of abuse. We work with a lot of different people. We go in this park and people say all kinds of things about Washington Square Park. There's Muslim guys that sell drugs in the park. They do. I know, because I walk up to them sometime and they're like, Mom, is that you? Literally, they've said, you know, we'll send it. You don't have to pay for delivery. And I'm like, no, it's okay. Like, I don't want any of it. And then when we have a conversation, I'm like, why are you doing this, man? And they say, nobody hires us for anything. We don't know how to do anything else. I still have to feed my kids. And what ummah? What's the advantage of having 6,000 people for an Eid prayer in Washington Square Park if we're not building something for that guy to have a solid re-entry back into society? Wa'amatihim, there's nasiha to this category of people also. What keeps me from thinking about people that I share space with in these ways? The survivor of abuse goes quite often back to their abuser because there's not supportive communities set up for them. Nasiha, if you read in books of fiqh, gets categorized as communal obligation by some people. That somebody's got to be the one who's bringing the advice into the picture. Because what if nobody did it? And nobody admonished anybody or said anything. That's the whole point of a prophet coming with a book. He didn't come because everything was great in Mecca. He came because people were burying their daughters alive. He came because people created stratified society based off of class and race. They were extremely racist and sexist in Meccan society. There was no boundaries because of an absence of accountability. The whole thing comes to tell you how to improve as a person. How can you say that the religion doesn't have room for somebody to come and give you advice? One of the most important things is that we have to think really deeply about how we connect to people just broadly. Not just the ones that we get along with, not just the ones that we enjoy eating a meal with, not just the ones that we look for to extend greetings of peace to, but the guy who says to me that nobody else will hire me, I have to still feed my family. We're not honoring the rights that he has over us. All of us. That's what communal obligation is. When nobody gets it done, the entire community bears responsibility for it. Do you see what I mean? That's why we have to think about things a little differently in terms of institutional development, in terms of building spaces, in terms of building shelters and building clinics. What's the advantage of you having multiple homes that you own? What's the advantage of you having 7 digits of savings or 6 digits of savings where there's literally a guy who prays with you and he has to sell weed in order to feed his kids because you're not creating the systems that understand he exists? And then Shaitan distracts us through an absence of wellness. So the biggest challenges we have come from now core beliefs that are structured in the aftermath of colonization and imperialism and slavery that we feel we're only good if we have it the way whiteness tells us we should have it. But this religion teaches us through a prophet who treated the pauper and the king exactly the same. Isa alayhi salam, in the hadith, he asks people if the gold, the silver, and the copper coin mean something different to them. Each of those 3 coins, gold, silver, and copper. And they say, yes, of course. And he says, they're all the same to me. And when you can bring that into how you relate to people and how you connect to people and how you let people connect to you and let people be there for you, the word changes substantially. This 5th category is going to not be the one we come into interaction with the most in that sense, because everything we do goes back to God in this religion. But if we're thinking about it in terms of tangibility, most of your day is going to be spent interacting with just people in the worldly sense of how you interact with things, right? And think about in New York City. You choose to live in New York City. You don't live in other parts of the country. We went on this retreat to New Mexico. How many of you went to New Mexico with us last time? Yeah, Abir and Amani went. The rest of you will come at some point. It's amazing. This town that we were in at Dar al-Islam, 700 people are like residents of this town, right? 700 people. That's less people than we get for Jummah on Fridays. Are the population of this town, meaning they're not bumping into so many people all the time. But you live in a city where at any given time, on a given street, there's 700 people in a given building. You're going to run into doormen that open doors for you. You're going to run into like people who are baristas at the cafes that you're in. There's places open till 2-3 o'clock in the morning, meaning there's going to always be people around you. And you have accountability based off of how you treat people. And you also have accountability, not necessarily on how you let someone treat you. We are not responsible for things we are coerced to or forced into. Abuse is always wrong, and it doesn't take 2 people to create that dynamic. But barring situations of abuse and oppression, in most interactions, there's 2 people that create a dynamic. And you have to think about what you bring into the creation of that dynamic, but the way we are treated aside how we tolerate others treating people around us. You cannot be a guy who lets other guys mistreat women. And if you have to think about that in a selfish mode, what will you say to God? Fundamentally, you cannot be a woman who lets women also get mistreated. And if somebody would say, well, aren't there men who get mistreated too? Yes, there are, but the proportionality of women to men is much higher. That's just fact. You can't be in a place where you tolerate certain things, the absence of certain things. You got to be bold enough, and that's why nasiha has a root in positivity, of compassion, love, sincerity, to turn to people like the ones you're sitting with now and saying, hey man, Khalid just told us about this guy who's in the park. The goal is not that you go look for him and set up a GoFundMe for him or give him like a meal, right? You're thinking about it too simplistically. The goal is to acknowledge his existence. You're exposed to his narrative and then turn to the people around you and say, what do we build institutionally to help people that are in this situation? I'm smart enough to create a venture that has jobs attached to it. Let me be smart about who I hire and what it is that I'm creating in terms of positions for people. Do you get what I mean? And you can embed all of this into this hadith, Adinu Nasiha, and you can see a connection that brings you to this fifth category. Because you start, right? Qulna liman, they say, O Messenger of God, to who? Lillahi, to Allah, wali kitabihi, to his book, wali rasulihi, to his messenger, to the a'imma of the Muslims, and then you get a'matihim. So if there's this sequential understanding, right? Like when you have hadith and words are linked together, they're not at random. There's a connectivity that's there, just like in the Quran. So if you can bring a sense of sincere goodwill to your relationship with God, and then you trickle it down to these other categories, how would you not then have good conduct to God's creation? You see? And that starting point becomes imperative to get to this ending point. So we don't want to belabor the idea, but you get the idea, right? The last thing we want to talk about as we get now into, like, Maghrib will be in 10 minutes, right? So we want to talk just about, like, nasiha itself, like the idea of advice, counsel, admonition. This is a big part of Islam as a religion. You have to have people who are able to give you advice and advise you, not make your decisions for you, right? Nobody can make your choices for you. At some point, you have to grow up in the prism of accountability that says, I will be accountable for what I do and what I don't do. But in this prism of nasiha now, advice, it's not just I'm going to throw things at random at people, but there's two parts to it, the giving and the receiving. And it's really hard for us sometimes to take advice or to take feedback, even when somebody says it to us in the worst possible way. You still got to be in a place where you're able to say, like, is this something that I can actually yield some type of growth through? A category of giving advice, a quality of it, is that you have to really love the person you're giving the advice to, because it has to be for their benefit, not to tweak your ego. You can run around through masjids and pull on, like, people's scarves because hair is coming out, or tell people, like, you're not standing this way, or your pants shouldn't be like this and that. And you could do that with love, but there's a good chance that people are just elevating themselves by denigrating somebody else. That's the worst way to feel good about yourself, by making somebody feel bad, right? And when people don't know how to heal, this is why you get parents that take stuff out on kids in ways that don't make sense. Children's hearts take in adult emotions that they should never take in. But someplace it has to be kind of cut off. So under the guise of advice, you're just mocking somebody, right? Well, you don't do this right, or you don't do that right. Like, where did this turn into an argument or a fight? So you want to give advice to someone, it's got to come from that place of good intention. But the receiving part of the advice is what we want to really focus on. Do you know what I mean? So what I'd love for you to do is turn to the persons next to you. What is it that makes it easier for you to take somebody's advice? Like, what are things that allow for you to be open to someone's feedback, even their criticism, rooted in advice? And understanding, if we can extrapolate some kind of principles here, it'll probably help a lot of us, right? Because we want to have a heart that's soft, and a heart that's soft, that's lean in our tradition, a light heart, is a heart that's willing to take advice and counsel and not just push back on it and argue and fight. Does that make sense? So what are some of the things that you can take an awareness of yourself that, like, this is like something that helps me to take advice? And you can just have a realization. It's like, nobody has the ability to tell me anything. And I'm going to tell you because I love you. Take my advice, right? That's terrible. You're setting yourself up for a slippery slope, and Shaitan's got you. Because how is there growth if there's nothing to improve upon? And if there's nobody other than you that you rely upon for advice and counsel, that's not good, man. Like, that doesn't make sense. The Prophet didn't know what to do on certain occasions. He asks people, like, what he should do. That's there in the hadith. So how can you and I be better at taking advice? What makes it hard? Maybe that's a better starting point. What makes it difficult to take advice? If we could talk about that for a couple minutes, and then we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead.
Yeah, but it's like...
Okay, so what are some of the things, what makes it hard to take advice, or to give advice, or whatever you talked about? I don't remember what I asked, but yeah. What do we discuss? Smug ribs in 5 minutes, just so you know, if anyone's fasting, so you don't break your fast early. What do we discuss? Yeah.
Your relation to the thing that you're getting advice on. So if it's something that's already coming from a place of vulnerability or something that you're like fundamentally feeling a little bit shakier on, if someone's trying to give you advice on something, it kind of doubles down on whatever that wound is, because they're not only exposing it, but then they're trying to kind of like navigate it in a way that you're not sure how you're navigating it.
Yeah. I like to give the example when I got married. My wife and I had like an open wedding ceremony, and anyone could come that wanted to. And there was thousands of people that showed up, alhamdulillah. We did it at the 96th Street Masjid, and that day they had 6 jamaas for Asr because of the number of people that showed up. Jazakallah khair. And it was great. It was amazing. A lot of well-wishers, people just wanted to be there. They were there. And then a month into our marriage, my wife told me that I don't have any friends. And I said, what do you mean? There was thousands of people at our wedding. And she said, you don't have friends. Like, you don't invest time into relationships. You don't have deep relationships. And no part of me wanted to hear it. I pushed back on it immensely to my detriment. And through most of my 20s, my self-care was also terrible. And I felt more alone than I've ever felt in my life, creating like conundrums inwardly, saying, I have to be there for others. I can't let anyone be there for me. And it just didn't make any sense, in addition to so much other things that she wasn't telling me vindictively, but from a place of care, I just was pushing back against it, you know? What else? What else did we discuss? Yeah.
We were talking about advice, and Shannon said something about the delivery, and I thought that was very succinct, because how the advice is delivered makes a huge impact.
I talked about like
subtlety.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So echoing on the delivery, and I think just coming from a place of not making a big show and fanfare of the advice speaks to the intention. And something that resonated with me was being understood. So making sure that the advice giver understands the one who is to receive the advice and is intentional or kind in the delivery.
Amazing, right? Who are these people for you? And you can't say they don't exist. You're lying. They do exist, but you're not bringing them into your life for what reason? Do you know? I shouldn't have to get married to someone that I'm deeply in love with for there to be somebody who's able to tell me when I'm being an idiot. Do you know what I mean? That cannot be the solution to all of this. That for however many years I put myself through real terrible experiences in terms of self-care, wellness, etc., because nobody was there that was telling me, but I wasn't actively bringing these people into my life, right? As you build these characteristics, then you say, like, who are these people that I can go to? I'm not imposing myself on anyone, but I just need someone that's going to help me get better. Any other thoughts on this? What else did we discuss? Yeah.
Responsible for something you're doing wrong, and that's like, because
you have to come to that realization, and it's really hard to be able to accept that in the first
place. Yeah, and just think about this from the standpoint of what you know about Islam, right? The whole religion is based on accountability. That's why a lot of people don't like being Muslim, because in other religions, you can just claim one thing and then you're given salvation. You know, it's a green light to go do whatever mess you want to. Do you know what I mean? In this religion, our God says, do what you want, but I'm going to ask you about it. And you have to be in this place. So at a baseline, Shaitan is going to get you at a foundational level. Rather than embracing accountability as a mode for spiritual elevation, he's going to make you walk on eggshells around responsibility. You did do what you did to that girl. Doesn't matter what your friends told you, you did it. You have to come to a place of recognition that that nonsense came from you. You were in a place where you mistreated your mother. You did. You didn't do right by the person that was entrusting something within you. If you don't have accountability here, accounts still are going to be taken when you stand in front of God. Does that make sense? And this whole idea of not bettering oneself, this is the opposite of arrogance. Because confidence is rooted in me being able to recognize with gratitude my God-given spiritual gifts as well as my non-strengths. Arrogance just has me see weakness in the world around me. Confidence enables me to see I can have a default state of being good, but a good person can always be better. Shaitan is going to get you to not think that there's anything to improve upon, and then there's nothing to be better by. All of it goes down to the most simplistic levels of vulnerability. So you surround yourself with good hearts, you surround yourself with people who are willing to take their advice. Somebody who tells you you do everything right or validates the wrong that you do, that person is not thinking out of your best interest. There's a young woman who came to me and she said, can you go tell my friend, I get really worried about her, that she drinks a lot, goes to the club a lot, I don't know what some guy's going to do to her one night. And I said, yeah, of course I'll talk to her. What did she say when you told her this? And she said, I didn't tell her anything. And I said, okay, why? I was trying to think about this strategically. And she said, I don't want her to get upset with me. And I said, well, that's not a good enough reason. If you had said she won't listen to me or she won't hear what I have to say, but you don't want somebody to be mad at you, that's why you're letting them do something that's dangerous to themselves? And then I ended up talking to the girl anyway. But in order to allow for ourselves to have people like that in our lives, you got to also think what you're bringing to the relationships that you're blessed with. Do you know? That isn't you're just talking off the top of your head to alleviate your own anxiety, that you don't know what to do for someone, but you validate their feelings, help guide them to a place of decision-making. But if they're being an idiot, you got to be able to sometimes be in a place where somebody tells you you're an idiot, or that you can tell someone because you care about them enough that, hey, you're being an idiot too. Do you get what I mean? Right? And so it's got to be something proactive. You don't have these people to give you advice that are not just about dunyawi things. And this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then we'll call the adhan. You got to have people who give you advice that also have the mindset of the akhirah existing. Because if people don't have that as a presence in their advice, they're still limited from the standpoint of what they're offering to you that's going to be purely in terms of what is in the here and not what comes later. So you might have to do things that are better for you later that are not going to be good for you right now. And some people might tell you that do this because they're thinking from their scope. Like when I talk to someone from a different religion, I don't have to mock their beliefs, but their understanding of a prophet is not the same as my understanding of a prophet. Their understanding of God is not the same as my understanding of God. Their understanding of certain ethics then are not the same. And so somebody that you take advice from that also is aware that there's a world beyond this one isn't just telling you what you want to hear, but is able to tell you what you need to hear. Does that make sense? Okay, so we're going to break for Maghrib. We're going to have iftar after. On Mondays and Thursdays, we're doing potluck iftars, so feel free to bring stuff with you, but we have some food as well. And stick around for it, right? There's a good number of us here. It'd be great if people spent like 10, 20 minutes together meaningfully having food. There's barakah in this, right? You feel overwhelmed at times. The companions come to the Prophet and say, we eat, but we don't feel full. And the Prophet says, perhaps you eat separately. And they say, yes. And he says, eat together and mention the name of Allah over what you eat. You will feel more full, you know? So there's barakah in eating together. Just learn each other's names. Spend some time in each other's company, suhbah, and it'll help to connect us more. And then some of the things we talk about won't just be like conjectured. If you know people deeply here, then you'll know who you can build for the guy in the park that nobody's creating jobs for him, right? You can't build with somebody that you don't know. Do you get what I mean? So stick around for the iftar, and then maybe in the middle of it, we'll tell people what's happening for the rest of the week, inshallah. And people just move the chairs against the wall. We'll call the adhan for Maghrib. You want to call the adhan? Yeah.
Wait, let me turn this off real quick.
Yeah.